Court of Appeals for the Third District of the State of Texas, sitting in Austin, is now in session.
Thank you so much. Y'all can be seated. Thank you. All right. Good morning. Welcome to the Third Court of Appeals. Justice Theofanis and also Justice Crump and I welcome you to the Third Court. This is cause number 25111 CR Bible versus the State of Texas. If I could have counsels introduce yourself for the court's record. Thank you.
Good morning. Stephen Azar for Appellant Daniel Bible.
Thank you.
Yes. Good morning. I'm Blake Ewing, Assistant District Attorney for the 33rd, 14th, 4th Judicial Districts for the County of Blanco, State of Texas. And I'm joined this morning by Perry Thomas, who's the District Attorney for Burnett, Blanco, Llano, and San Saba Counties.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councils, as you know, this is being broadcast live on our YouTube channel and will be available for you later. And as you also know, we've got 20 minutes aside, and I assume you'll take 15 and then reserve 5 for rebuttal, Council.
That's correct, Your
Honor. All right. Thank you very much. And our very sophisticated light system here, the yellow will be 2 minutes left, and then red will be there for you to wrap up. So with that, Mr. Aslett, you may proceed, Council.
May it please the court, this appeal presents a simple question. In a case with no forensic evidence and no third-party eyewitnesses, can a jury rationally convict a defendant of touching a complainant's breast when the complainant testifies that her breasts were not touched? The answer to that is no. Now, the state makes several arguments for why the answer to that question is somehow yes. None of them work. I want to go through them one by one. First, the state tries to analogize this case to Arroyo. That was a case from the CCA, where the CCA held that in an indecency with a child case, when a complainant testifies about chest touching, a jury can rationally infer breast touching when the touching occurred in a sexual manner. Arroyo is simply not on point because what we have here is an express denial of breast touching. The complainant was asked directly, were your breasts touched? She said no. That you cannot infer, yes, Justice.
May I jump in there just to set the stage on the issue? What definition of breast are you asking this court to consider?
So the term is not defined in the statute. The CCA has shied away of giving us a term. And so when a term is undefined in the statute, a jury simply has to use its own common sense, everyday understanding of what the term means. So I don't think this court needs to define what breast means. But here, the complainant, who is a competent adult, who was not intellectually disabled, no indication that she did not understand on her own body where her breasts were, says that her breasts were not touched, drew a diagram that indicated an area between her breasts, and expressly denied breast touching.
Now, Counsel, isn't it true that even if she had gotten up there, let's say this were a sex assault case or a DV case, and she got up there and recanted, just got up there and just blindsided the state and recanted her whole story and said, nope, he didn't do anything to me. But the outcry witness comes up, like the forensic interviewer, comes up and says, no, she told me, yeah. She showed me he touched her breast. Can't the jury, in a case like that, weigh that those two facts and go, well, we believe the outcry witness and we don't believe that recanting? Doesn't that happen like all the time?
And Chief Justice Byrne, that would be correct for a recantation case, but this is not a recantation case.
So. But isn't it the same? I mean, she said no. Couldn't that be a recant? Just like, no, he didn't abuse me.
So in a recantation case, you have an initial statement that this criminal act occurred. So a recantation case would be, I was touched on my breast, and then later saying no. So there's an earlier statement that the jury can credit that comes from the complainant, the only person that can say where she was touched. Here there is no inconsistent statement. The complainant uses a consistent term throughout that she defines for the jury, bra line. I was touched on my bra line, it's where the bra sits, it's not where my breasts are. She used the term bra line with Nurse Broussard. Breast was never once mentioned in the history. The only area she circled for the SANE exam was her genitals. That was admitted at State's Exhibit 1. She defines bra line at trial as a term of art that she uses, just like we would interpret a special term in a statute. She says bra line to mean something, not breast. And she uses that very term with Ms. Niemeyer, the forensic interviewer.
Well, I'm going to go back to the question. Our sister court, Texarkana, used a dictionary definition as the fore or ventral part of the body between the neck and the abdomen. So the definition really is important in this case. And I think I have to send it back to you to say which one should we use? Should we follow Chambers v. State, Texarkana, or perhaps the District Court of Maine used that same definition? And bra line would fall within that definition, correct?
If this court is wanting to attach a specific definition to breast, I would go with something closer to the Merriam-Webster's dictionary definition or the definition cited in Nelson, which are the mammary glands on a female that are milk-producing.
We have a child, even though she was 19 when she testified, she was a child when the alleged event occurred, correct? No mammary glands at the time to speak.
That's correct, but the focus of all of these sexual statutes, the aggravated sexual assault of a child statute, the indecency statute, is areas of a person's body that have some special interest in a sexual encounter, right? The genitals, the breasts, the buttocks, the anus. So these are specifically listed precisely because they are areas that adults anyway would probably go touching in a sexual encounter. And I think to broaden the definition of breast to encompass effectively the entire chest area takes us well beyond what the legislature is trying to criminalize with the statute. They could have simply said that the body of a child, any touching of the body of a child with sexual intent would qualify, but they didn't. They cabinet to these areas that are expressly associated with that, and so I would urge the court, in keeping with that statutory scheme, to pick, if it wishes, a definition of breast that adheres to that. But getting back to the forensic interviewer for a moment, bra line is what she says consistently. And it comes out at trial that bra line is a term of art that means not my breasts. And so there is, it's not like a recantation case where we have a denial that the jury can then credit an earlier statement of a criminal act occurring. It simply didn't happen.
Does the witness or the record reflect whether the touching occurred with the hand this way or this way? Because I'm envisioning a five-year-old, and I don't know what the jury saw. If a man's hand on a five-year-old on a bra line is this big on the chest of a five-year-old, a bra line is a line. A man's hand is 4 or 5 inches wide. I'm struggling with a wide man's hand and you going to a bra line and not encroaching on breast tissue.
I don't think we need to be that granular about this, Chief Justice Byrne. She didn't say whether this is a finger touching or a palm touching or anything like that. She just simply said that she was touched on her bra line.
But didn't the jury see some visual example in the jury box? Did they not see the witness give some type of example?
She did not gesture. There was a gesture that Ms. Niemeyer made when she testified. All they had was the drawing. And in the drawing, it's very clear that the area that she is describing is between her breasts. There's a minor encroachment because it's not a perfectly anatomically drawn drawing. We don't have, the full breast drawn on the figure, but the context in which she made the drawing is explaining that she was not touched on her breast. I mean, it doesn't get clearer than, no, he didn't touch my breasts.
Counsel, the jury was tasked with weighing all of her testimony as a whole, right? So if she said he didn't touch my breast, and then also described where he touched her, weren't they entitled to apply their understanding of what breast is, the common and ordinary meaning, to the entirety of her testimony?
They certainly are, but the entirety of her testimony, and the only way it can rationally be interpreted, is that her breasts were not touched. She said they were not touched. She drew on a diagram an area between her breasts, saying that, you know, she was not touched on her breasts.
So is your position that a common and ordinary meaning of breast categorically cannot include the space between the breasts or the bra line, that the jury could not conclude that she was touched on her breasts if they believe that she was touched between her breasts or on her bra line?
That's absolutely correct, Justice Ifanis. I think that what we shouldn't do is stretch the definition of breast so far to include an area in between them. I mean, it's literally defining something that includes the space between. There has to be, for the term to have any meaning, an area on a person's chest that does not include the breasts. And, you know, however this court wants to define it or a jury to interpret it, you cannot take an express denial without some more to mean the exact opposite of what the complainant.
That also means we have to isolate her testimony alone. The jury didn't just have her testimony. They had other witnesses upon which they could rely, which was the nurse and the outcry witness. Did they not? So they don't just look at her testimony. They look at the outcry witness and the nurse, and they look at the totality of the evidence, do they not?
Of course, and I'm not saying that the jury can't look at the totality of the evidence or believe some all or none of what a witness says, but in a sufficiency analysis, there are certain types of evidence that this court can and does say cannot rationally support a verdict beyond a reasonable doubt. So I'm not asking this court to, you know, to say that the jury's we're infringing on the jury's credibility determination. What I am asking this court to say is that secondhand interpretations of a witness's communication cannot be interpreted to mean the contrary of what the witness has consistently and repeatedly said.
But couldn't the jury infer that with her young age and his adult hand, that if he touched her bra line, he would necessarily be touching her breast?
Not when she describes it in the manner in which she describes it, Justice Crump. She is saying that this occurred in effectively the center of her chest and did not include her breast. Now, I understand that the physiology of...
Wait, just a minute. Center of her breast.
Or center of her chest. I apologize.
Yes, she said bra line and he went crossways. So you keep saying between, but when you read the testimony, she keeps saying crossways, horizontal, and not using the word between. Now, I know how the picture looks, and I know your inference is that it bled, the yellow bled, but she says crossways and a horizontal movement on the bra line. So this between thing seems to be an inference you draw.
Even using the term crossways, the term crossways is said in the context of saying, did not touch my breast. I mean, I guess the analogy I would draw is, imagine that you go to the doctor, you're complaining of neck pain, the doctor hands you a diagram, please show me on this diagram where you were your pain is, you circle it, it's a circle that part of it encompasses the chin. Would we bring in a separate doctor who doesn't understand the context of that interaction, show them the diagram? Well, where on here does it say that the person indicated their pain? Well, the neck, but also their head, because part of the circle encompasses the chin. We wouldn't say that, because the interpretation of that is made out of context completely. Same thing, if I'm complaining of, let's say it's a personal injury suit, I'm complaining of neck pain, I tell my doctor it's neck pain, I'm going to the physical therapist. We wouldn't put the physical therapist on the stand and say, well, yes, he came in for neck pain. He told me he described neck pain, but then he made a gesture, and it looked like he might have been pointing to his head or that he was pointing to his head. You have to take, in a sufficiency analysis, the cumulative force of all of the evidence. And could a rational jury take all of that to conclude breast touching? What makes the evidence insufficient here is fundamentally that these two witnesses are making interpretations of gestures, the entire context of which in which they are made is that breast touching did not occur. That's the case for Nurse Broussard, who she was only told about bra line touching, and the same thing for Ms. Niemeyer. It's a consistent term that, you know, however this court ultimately wants to define breast, the complainant said that for me, on my body, as an adult, remembering back to when I was five, I was not touched on my breasts. I understand that the physiology is different and that she's making an analogy on an adult drawing to her child body. But it simply would have been very easy to say. I mean, I was touched on my breasts, but she never did. And what makes this particularly powerful is that she could have, you know, dropped Mr. Bible in the grease completely. I mean, she is describing a very disturbing, sexually charged encounter where her genitals were clearly touched. She's very express about that. There's no reason for her to hold back at all. And I think that speaks even more to the truth of this, that she's being very, very consistent and descriptive about what parts of her body were touched, that and that her breasts, however this court wants to define that, were not.
Isn't the jury free to adopt a different understanding of what the breast is than the complaining witness?
I would say that certainly in a case if we had a very young child or somebody who's intellectually disabled. But I don't think if we had an adult coming in and saying that, you know, I was not touched on my breast, that we would bring in somebody to interpret a gesture made when a person is saying that to encompass a different body part. That's just not competent evidence. I see that I have time. I will reserve the rest. I will answer that question on rebuttal further.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. All right. Let's hear from the appellee. Thank you for the
Thank you, Chief Justice Byrne, and may it please the court. This is a pure sufficiency review. And so the court's determination is going to be governed by the standard set out in Jackson v. Virginia. And that review standard gives full responsibility to the trier of fact, to the jury, to resolve any conflicts that may arise in the testimony or even within an individual witness's testimony. If the factual record supports conflicting inferences, then this court must presume that the trier of fact resolved those in favor of the prosecution and must defer to their resolution. The ultimate question for the court is, considering the cumulative force of all the evidence, could a rational juror have found the elements beyond a reasonable doubt? So as applied to this case, I think the question is, could any rational juror have decided to discount Luna's statement, the pseudonym for the victim in this case, discount Luna's statement that her breast was not touched, decide that their common understanding of that term is not the same as hers, and she just got that definition wrong, and instead credit all of the other evidence, some of which came from Luna herself, indicating that in fact her breast was touched? Could they rationally make that decision? I think the answer to that is yes, and so the court is required to defer to their resolution of any conflicts and affirm their verdict. Now, since this is sufficiency review, I know the court has read the party's briefs. I won't spend too much time belaboring all the facts, but I do want to touch on the essential ones and answer any questions the court may have about them. So the jury first heard from Lana Niemeyer, who was the forensic interviewer. She was the outcry witness, as Chief Justice Byrne pointed out. And Luna told her that the appellant had moved his hand back and forth across what she described as her bra line. Now, Ms. Niemeyer told the jury Luna was 16 years old when she was making the outcry, but she was describing an event that happened when she was 5 or 6, and so she wasn't wearing a bra at the time. Bra line was the term she used to describe that area of her chest where she was touched. And while she was telling Ms. Niemeyer that, she was indicating with her hand, Ms. Niemeyer said, where that touching took place. And Ms. Niemeyer told the jury from her recollection that she was indicating that her breast area was being touched. Texas law is very clear. Outcry testimony is substantive evidence that is itself sufficient to support a jury's verdict beyond a reasonable doubt. So you're absolutely right, Chief Justice Byrne. The jury on that evidence alone could have said, you know what, we credit her description of how the victim in this case was indicating where she'd been touched. That makes sense to us, and that makes more sense, or we give that more weight than the victim's interpretation of an undefined statutory term like breast. And we could be done. The outcry testimony alone could sustain the conviction. You know, but even if they didn't necessarily credit Ms. Niemeyer's recollection of how the victim was indicating. Again, you're right, they could have said, well, just based on how she described the touching, a grown man's hand moving, as the victim put it, back and forth across the bra line of a 5 or 6 year old child is inevitably going to be touching her breast, as the jury commonly understands that term. They can make that conclusion on their own, and that evidence would be sufficient. The bottom line is they were not required, Justice Theofanis, to accept Luna's understanding of the term breast. She is the only person who may know exactly where she was touched, but it's not only her opinion of what the term breast means that controls here. The jury is allowed to draw their own conclusions about that.
Well, I feel like I need to ask you the same question. What definition do you believe this court should use in defining breast?
I agree with Mr. Aslett that I don't think this court has to adopt a definition, Judge, because the ultimate question is, could the jury have rationally inferred that her breast was touched based on their understanding of the common meaning of that word? I'm glad you found that Chambers case. I found it in preparation for oral argument too. And I think what that illustrates is that the definitions for the undefined term breast are incredibly broad. The Texarkana court said that it could mean essentially anything on the front of the upper torso of the body. So I don't think the court has to adopt that definition, but it should recognize that a juror could have adopted that definition, and that would have made their decision rational in this case. Then Luna also testified at trial. And I agree, this isn't a recantation case. Her testimony was very consistent with what she told Ms. Niemeyer. She used slightly different terms. She told Ms. Niemeyer that the appellant moved his hand back and forth across the bra line. She said at trial that he moved it crossways. In fact, she said he moved it crossways like I drew it in State's Exhibit 17, which we'll come to. But he moved it crossways against the line where the bra sits. Now, that description in and of itself could include the breast, the line where the bra sits. And I do disagree with Mr. Aslett in one respect. The court reporter did make a parenthetical notation in the record that as she was describing how the appellant moved his hand up to her chest area and then down to what she called her bikini line, there's a parenthetical notation that she was demonstrating at the time. So the jury could have witnessed her giving her, now we don't know what that demonstration looked like, which I think is why the Jackson standard kind of defers to jury's evaluations of weighing the evidence, because they're better positioned to evaluate a witness's demeanor or gestures in a way that this court, just working off the cold record, can't. But her testimony was largely consistent with what she told Ms. Niemeyer. She just introduced a little ambiguity or confusion when she answered the prosecutor's question, did he touch her breast? No. As she understood that term, she thought he didn't, apparently. Now, at that point, the prosecutor could have kind of dug into the, what do you mean by that? What's the definition of that? Explain that to me. But I think he did the best thing, which was just hand her State's Exhibit 17. And State's Exhibit 17 is, I think, the strongest evidence to support the jury's verdict here, because it's a diagram. She was asked, you know what? Forget all the definitional confusion. Just draw it. Just draw where you were touched. And she put a mark on that diagram that clearly included the breasts on the figure in the diagram. And then, importantly, she affirmed to the prosecutor that that drawing was an accurate description of where she was touched. So I know the appellant has argued that it must have been an accidental marking, or it must have been overbleed from a marker or something like that. But that's not what Luna said. Luna said that that was accurate, and so the jury was allowed to rely on that. That exhibit, State's Exhibit 17, which I think the appellant incorporated into his brief and is in the record, obviously, it's direct evidence from the victim of the precise location on her body where she was touched. And it circumvents any questions or ambiguities or confusion about undefined statutory terms or the precise anatomical meaning of the word breast or the word genitals. The jury can just look at that and say, okay, I don't really care what she says because she may not understand that term. I'm just gonna go off her drawing, and that's enough evidence. And then for good measure, the state showed the same exhibit to Rebecca Broussard, the forensic nurse, and she testified, yes, those markings incorporate, as a nurse, that incorporates the breast. So even if the jury hadn't really credited, they didn't really know what a breast was technically, they could have credited Nurse Broussard's testimony, and that would have been sufficient evidence in and of itself. So did you have a question?
Well, I guess the follow-up to that is, if this court finds that there is insufficient evidence to support the charged offense, what is the appropriate remedy? Is it acquittal, or is it the attempted touching that is a lesser included offense?
You know, I hadn't really considered that, Justice Crump. I think generally speaking, in a sufficiency review, the remedy would be rendering of acquittal. I don't think that's the appropriate course here, obviously, for the court, but I think it would be rendering a verdict of acquittal.
The state isn't asking the court to find that there is sufficient evidence?
Well, I think there certainly would be sufficient evidence, and so I think we would request.
Because we've got evidence that she stopped, she went to the restroom, and had she not, that
right.
Things might have gone differently.
Yeah, Justice Crump. There's also plenty of evidence of the intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire in this case. I mean, the touching move from the breast to what she just described as the bikini area, but what was the genitals. So there was enough evidence of the intent to arouse or gratify that I think the evidence would certainly support a finding that there was an attempt to touch her breast, even if it wasn't accomplished. But I think the evidence shows that it was accomplished here. So appellant's position seems to be that the jury was required to interpret the diagram in light of Luna's earlier testimony, that earlier testimony should be the lens through which all other evidence is viewed. But that's a question for the jury to decide as the finder of fact. She seems to be arguing that no, they're required to credit her verbal description, her definition of the word breast, over her drawing of where she was touched, even though an undefined statutory term is sort of inherently ambiguous and open to different definitions, as we've explored. And the drawing is actual direct evidence from the victim that she affirmed was accurate. So the jury was clearly rational in weighing that, would have been rational in weighing that exhibit more heavily than the victim's account of whether or not that term technically was her breast. The fact that she rejected the term doesn't control the analysis. And I think the Court of Criminal Appeals explained why in the Arroyo case, which Mr. Aslett mentioned and which we both briefed to the court. The victim in Arroyo was an adult at the time that she was testifying, but she was only 9 years old, I think, when the touching occurred, so it's similar to our case. At trial, she used the term chest instead of the term breast. She never used the term breast. And the Court of Criminal Appeals found that the evidence was sufficient nonetheless because there were some other facts in the record from which the jury could reasonably infer that when she said chest, she really meant breast. And first off, those same types of supporting facts are here in this case. The victim, when she initially made the disclosure, was crying and inconsolable. She described it as an inappropriate touching, not as an innocent touching. As a matter of fact, she began by saying it was just cuddling, but then it moved to something else and I knew it was serious, and that's when the breast touching occurred. So the jury could infer that this is not an innocent touching, it's a sexual touching, and so it must have been on a part of her body that was sexual in nature. She also described that the touching progressed to the genitals, just as it did in Arroyo. I actually think we have significantly more evidence here of breast touching, not just touching of another part of the torso, because, say, it's Exhibit 17, her description to the outcry witness about how the touching occurred. So there's significantly more. We also have evidence that the appellant in this case had sexually abused three other members of his family who were minors. And so the jury could rationally infer from that they're allowed to draw from that assumptions about his character being the kind of person who molests children. But it's not just the facts of Arroyo that are important. The reasoning of Arroyo is also very important because the court said, or they kind of reasoned that we know that children aren't required to use precise statutory terms, but even an adult victim may be less likely to use the term breast when they're referring to their own prepubescent chest. The term just may not really seem to fit, and so we give them some leeway there with the statutory terms. So the failure to control, the fail to use the term breast does not control the analysis. Now, of course, appellants are arguing that Arroyo is distinguishable because in that case, the victim used the term chest, but she didn't deny the use of the term breast like she did in this case. But I think the reasoning is the same. If an adult is less likely to use the term breast to describe a child's chest, then she's equally likely to answer no if she's asked directly, did he touch your breast? So The use of the statutory term isn't the final word, is the takeaway from Arroyo from my perspective. The jury could still look to other evidence and decide, do we want to credit her opinion about this or do we want to make our own decision about it? And it would be rational for them to make their own decision about it. The problem is that sometimes undefined statutory terms, like the term breast, can mean slightly different things to different people. And the jury was instructed in this case, in the court's instructions, they are required to give undefined terms their ordinary meanings. And breast was not a defined term in the charge. So the court instructed them, it means what it means to you, and they came to a verdict. And also, they, like I said before, they had Nurse Broussard's testimony. Even if they didn't know what it meant to them, they had a witness saying what it meant to her, and that those markings on State's Exhibit 17 were sufficient. Now, despite all this kind of ambiguity, and people may use different terms for this and that, it's still the state's burden. It's the state's burden to prove whatever we've alleged in our indictment. This indictment alleges that the appellant touched Luna's breast with the intent to arouse or gratify, so we got to prove that he touched her breast. It's not good enough to say he was kind of in the area. We fully accept that burden. It's our burden. But it is not our burden to make the victim say it in those particular terms. It's not our burden to have her accept the use of that term as a description of the place where she was touched. All we have to do is give the jury evidence that is sufficient to support a rational inference that the touching occurred as alleged. And it was rational in this case for the jury to credit Luna's other testimony about the nature of the touching, to credit Ms. Niemeyer's description of Luna's indication with her hand of how the touching occurred, and particularly State's Exhibit 17. It was rational for them to credit that and just think, you know, Luna, she just got it wrong. She was a little wrong about that definition. And so since that was a rational decision for them to make, Jackson v. Virginia controls, and this court should defer to the jury's resolution of any conflicts in the testimony and affirm the conviction. If there are any other questions from the court? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Yes, let's hear from Mr. Bible's point of view. Thank you.
Thank you. A couple of things. First, to address the extraneous offenses. No doubt there was a lot of disturbing extraneous offense. Admitted, the jury, of course, could use that to infer that Mr. Bible had a predilection towards children and, you know, infer intent or the sexual nature of the encounter. What extraneous offense evidence cannot do is be proof of a particular act on a particular occasion. So the extraneous offense evidence just doesn't speak at all to whether there was or was not breast touching. Effectively, what the state is asking this court to conclude here is that a 19-year-old doesn't understand on her body where her breasts are. Fundamentally, that's their argument. The key takeaway from this context is everything. Drawings, gestures are always made in a particular context. And what gives meaning to any gesture or any drawing is the verbal communications that come with that drawing or with that gesture. You know, if you were going to distill this case down to a simple rule, I would say that, you know, when we have an adult complainant that says that an offense did not occur and affirms that through their communications, you cannot use a third party's contrary interpretation of what that communication means to find somebody guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Nurse Broussard and Ms. Niemeyer's information is fundamentally secondhand and is occurring in the context of a complainant who's saying that she was touched not on her breast, whatever crossways means. As far as the reformation issue, of course, our position is that, you know, typically in a sufficiency review, the remedy is an acquittal. I don't know that we can necessarily infer attempt here. It seems that he was very careful about not moving his hand to an area where he would simply cup her breasts. He was certainly not careful at all about the genital touching. And so I don't know that there's necessarily evidence from which a jury could infer attempt to breast touch when he had every opportunity and means during this encounter and could touch other body parts and did and didn't touch her breast. So even if reformation to an attempt is possible, I don't think that there's sufficient evidence of an attempt on this record. Fundamentally, the state is asking this court to disconnect the drawing and the gestures in the context in which those are made, and that verbal communication has to take primacy because it's what our verbal communications do, what we say, that gives context to the gestures that we make and the drawings that we make. The only other point I want to say is that in insufficiency review, there is the Jackson standard does talk about mere modicum of evidence. And I know this is a term that hasn't really been developed a lot in the case law, but Jackson is very clear that you can have evidence that that is some evidence of guilt, that points toward guilt, but nonetheless, in the context of everything else, the cumulative force of all the evidence can't rationally support a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt. I would say, number one, the real way to interpret the testimony that Ms. Broussard and Ms. Niemeyer gave is simply it's incompetent evidence. They lack any foundation for their knowledge. It's not based on any personal knowledge. It's a contrary interpretation of a gesture that the complainant is saying means the opposite of what they're interpreting it to mean. But even if you want to give those interpretations some credit, it most arises to what Jackson would call a mere modicum of evidence. At best, it is something, but it's a terribly low and insufficient something. Fundamentally, the person who knows where she was touched is Luna. Luna was consistent from the beginning to everyone she spoke to. She was touched on her bra line. That term has a special meaning, that it does not include her breasts, and she reaffirmed that repeatedly. So in light of all of that, I would ask this court to hold that another witness's contrary interpretation of gestures that a competent adult makes can't overcome what that adult is saying happened to her. And I would ask that this court reverse the conviction on count one, render a judgment of acquittal.
Thank you, counsels. We appreciate your fine arguments and briefing, and this case is submitted. Thank you very much. Court will stand in recess.
All rise.